Good evening and welcome to the Disney Discord podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Graham from DLRP Roundup, and tonight I'm joined by Bernardo. Hello.
Hi there. Welcome, everyone.
Welcome to another fantastic show. I'm calling it fantastic because every show so far has been fantastic, so this one will be no different.
Of course,
we have a lot to talk about today. We have a lot. Yes, we even have an agenda. We don't often have an agenda.
That's true. So yeah. Let's start. Let's start on the first point, shall we?
If you like.
Yeah, sure. So Disney Plus, right?
Yes, Disney Plus. So this was a big piece of news. Disney Plus was released just around the time that COVID had occurred. It was released just before COVID, and Disney said this was the new content strategy. That from now on, it wasn't about DVDs and videos, and it wasn't about Disney channels, and it wasn't about Netflix, and it was all Disney Plus now. Bob Chapek pursued Disney Plus almost at the expense of everything else in the company, and the net result of that, I think, was that it made absolutely no money and probably lost more money in the company than any other venture they ever had.
Yeah.
So I think
it still is losing money. So let's just. Add that bit in.
Yeah, so Disney Plus has made no money since inception. It has made money. It has not made any profit.
There. Exactly.
So a rather extraordinary thing happened. Bob Iger, when he came back, said that we were going to make Disney Plus profitable. They've promised many times to make Disney Plus profitable, but obviously Disney Plus has not been profitable thus far. He suggests that they are going to manage it, and they're going to do it as quick as next year. So that was interesting news. Apparently they've only got another $300 million a quarter to make, and then it'll make some money. The other big revelation he had is he said the quality of the product of Disney Plus wasn't very good.
Brave thing to say when you're in charge of the company, I guess, but I guess it's true.
Well, the last time I've seen them admit that they maybe had a quality issue was back when, do you remember the Wookiee Cookie Biscuits in Disneyland Paris?
No, not really.
Well, there was a Wookiee Cookie Biscuit, and it dropped in price about a week after it came out, which was the other time I think that Disney have went, maybe it wasn't quite worth the money we thought it was worth. So what about you? What are your thoughts for Disney Plus? You're obviously a user of Disney Plus, so what's your thoughts on how the service has grown over the last couple of years?
So I personally think they focused a lot on quantity and not quality. And I think that's one of the things that Iger wants to change. And he said that. And he also said that Disney is trying to focus more on franchises that work. Honestly, I think that makes sense from a business standpoint. Another thing is, just one of the latest series, TV series that premiered on Disney Plus was... Percy Jackson, which was a huge success, and
huge.
A new season is coming along nicely, and so I think they're obviously trying to focus on big franchises for the time being, which I think makes complete sense, and I do think they're gonna break even this year, so this fiscal year, which isn't going to be easy, but I think they can do it. Taylor Swift just announced they're going to put on the Eras Tour videos, movie, whatever it is, on the platform, which I think is going to be very well received, and they're going to see a lot of new subscribers because of that, because Taylor Swift has a huge following. And yeah, I think that it's going to work out.
I think it's going to work out. So it's interesting they're doing the Taylor Swift thing because Taylor Swift is obviously known for being quite good at getting her own way with business deals. She's known as a very good businesswoman. Mm-hmm. So I think it probably cost a fair little bit to get her on Disney Plus. It's probably one of the most hotly anticipated streaming releases that, you know, are coming this year. So I think we're going to see something interesting there. Gameplay Extreme's got in the comments, Rock and Roller Coaster starring Taylor Swift, when? And I think that is quite an interesting comment, though, because Disney Plus has a massive catalogue, and it's the first time, we've spoken before about Disney are buying out Hulu, and obviously they're going to sort of merge mm-hmm. that in with Disney Plus, and it's going to become another sort of channel in the same way that it's Star for everybody in Europe.
Yep.
There's a huge catalogue there that Disney do not include in the parks. And, you know, I don't want to spoil what's coming up in the show, but we're going to talk about the $60 billion that's getting spent on expansion or investment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a huge wealth of attractions that could be built there. And I think it's yep. interesting to see Taylor Swift on the service, because I wonder if it's just a simple, here's Taylor Swift on Disney Plus, or if this could be the start of... Bob Iger has always been known for his content acquisition strategies, such as Star Wars and Marvel and Fox. Is yeah. Taylor Swift and her content perhaps, you know, going mm-hmm. to be a little bit more than just here it is on Disney Plus?
Yeah, yeah.
Is there going to be a partnership? You know, we had the American Idol experience. What does the Taylor Swift experience look like?
Exactly, and I think, exactly.
I'd be shocked. I've got to tell you, I'd be shocked if it was just Taylor Swift was coming for a one-time deal on Disney. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a lot more than that.
Yeah. So just to add a little something, the price has actually been released. The price that Disney paid Taylor Swift, I guess, for the streaming rights.
Really?
It was $75 million. And it was engaged in a bidding war with Netflix and Universal. So that's what we know.
75 million?
Yep.
I wonder if that can't be the overall deal. There's no way.
What do you think? You think it's more than that?
Well, it costs... I mean, one episode of Star Trek on Paramount Plus is like 10 million. It's like $13 million for a Mandalorian episode. If Disney have got something that may be one of the most watched, rewatched, and...
Yeah, I guess.
Overly, I mean, I'm not a Taylor Swift fan, but I mean, she's selling out concert venues worldwide.
Yeah.
You can't get tickets. They're €100.
Mm-hmm.
She sold out movie theatres, and she's sold out CDs. She's the greatest selling artist on the planet right now. You know, she was the number one tracked flight as she left Japan to go to the Super Bowl. I don't know, it just seems, for Disney, it seems...
I mean, it was a great deal then. Bob Iger got a great deal.
Yeah, I mean, this is her entire... You have to remember, the Taylor Swift The Eras Tour is a concert that spans, you know... I don't even want to say how many albums, because I don't know entirely, but it's a lot.
Yeah.
And if I get it wrong, Swift fans are going to attack me and comment.
The Swifties are going to get you.
Yeah, the Swifties are going to get me. So, wow, that's a deal. That's
yeah.
that is a deal. But well done to them. And I think much more will come from it. And I think this is where Disney Plus is going to grow. I think Disney Plus is going to become the home of family entertainment that's very good, that people mm-hmm. are going to be craving. And I think the strategy, when he says he's pursuing a more quality strategy, everybody wondered, what does that actually mean?
Yep.
And I think that Disney Plus are probably less interested now in you watching Disney Plus all day, binge watching 10 seasons or something, and are more interested in that sort of premium brand experience mm-hmm. that Disney mm-hmm. tried to portray, which is, if you want to see Taylor Swift, Disney Plus is where you go. If you want yep. to see... If you want to see big tent poles like Percy Jackson, Star Wars, and you want to see the latest Pixar and putting it back on a pedestal, I think that's where we're going to see it. And I think Disney Plus is going to be that premium.
Yeah, exactly.
It depends. So that was all released on an investor call, which is our second piece of information we got, or our second topic that we're going to cover tonight.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting investor call.
It was. I was not expecting, you know, all of that information to be released in an investor's call. So I was very glad it was.
So the big pieces of information that we got out of it, we found a few things. Number one, Disney are still making more money on less people. So the pricing is working. The parks have less people in them, there's less attendance, but there's more ticket revenue coming in.
Mm-hmm.
They are seeing a dip in on-site bookings. And I think that's probably because if you have less people coming overall, you're going to have less people staying. So
makes sense, yeah.
It does make sense. I do worry that it's quite short-term, though. Like, it we're is. Getting more... Yeah.
I think because... this is still something that came from the JPEG era. It's something I wish Iger would try to fix, but, you know, they're making money. So, well, they're not going to stop, are they?
The problem you've got is, I'd imagine it's the same for most people. Yeah, as a child, you watch Disney shows or movies, maybe the Disney Channel. You then venture out when you're a little bit old, teeny bopper, and you into the parks you go. And you enjoy the parks, and you enjoy them again as an adult, and you hopefully take your kids there. And that creates generations of people who value Disney or hold the brand in high regard. There's a huge problem if you suddenly start stopping that journey. Like, if the journey is you just watch it on Disney Plus, then you're no more loyal. You know, you don't generate loyal fans anymore.
Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah.
You know, over the long-term piece, you become a Netflix service rather than a parks or hotels or, you know. I think there's a fair worry that Disney could do that, but you're right. Maybe Bob Iger should have his eye on that. They upset an awful lot of people about ESPN and moving it to a streaming service rather than a cable service. However, my knowledge of sports is absolutely zero, so I'm not going to comment on that.
We can just skip that part.
As always, this is a live podcast, which means you can comment on the podcast or you can join the stage and you can tell us about sports, which I'm sure, you know, go sports. Or you can send some comments in. It turns out nobody in our chat is a sports person either. The second big thing was Taylor Swift, which we've already covered. And she comes on the 15th of March and it's Taylor Swift, the Eras Tour, Taylor's version. What I did like is they announced it on Taylor Swift's social channels at the exact second Bob Iger said it. So I don't know if that was... I don't think it was auto-posted, but I think somebody was just sitting listening for Taylor Swift's name and then it was like, press post. And I think that... I don't know why I find that so funny, but I find that quite funny. And then the next one that comes up, they announced a Moana animated sequel, which is a series rather than...
It is a movie. Yeah, it was going to be a TV series or a Disney Plus series, but as per what Disney said, Bob Iger saw it, was so impressed, and wanted to transform that into a movie. In my opinion, he just saw that Moana was the most watched movie in any platform last year, and he saw how much money he could make off the box office.
I should really bring up my notes. Sorry, my notes do say that, but it does say it's been changed from a series to a movie, not the other way around. This is my problem. I've never seen the Moana movie. No interest.
Really?
I have not seen Moana. I knew you were going to say that. we're getting Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, which is just another rehash of the Planet of the Apes, I suppose. Inside Out 2, I've seen Inside Out at least. Deadpool 3. We're getting Alien Romulus, and we're getting Mufasa, the Lion King. So,
which is due to December, is it not?
Yeah. Now, this is interesting, because the rumours have obviously been in Disneyland Paris, we're getting a Lion King-themed land. And, you know, it's not that anybody thought it was a terrible idea, but there was a lot of questions on why it's not a current property or a current IP that people play with. So, do you not find it quite interesting we're getting that as well?
Yeah, I do. You know, I don't really agree with when anyone says that The Lion King isn't popular enough for a land in a theme park, because The Lion King, the 2018 remake was one of the, I think it's on the top 15 biggest box office hits ever. So when you have that, it obviously is very popular. It's a household name. A lot of people know the characters, know the music. And I think it's going to be a huge success when it's built as a theme park land.
It's going to be interesting to see. Yeah. I was going to say, it's going to be interesting to actually have a ride based on it rather than just another show.
Exactly. Yeah. As a Lion King, a lot of shows around the Lion King in a lot of theme parks. These are theme parks around the world. We have in Animal Kingdom, Disneyland Paris, Hong Kong has one, I think. So, yeah. It's going to be interesting to see how they pull it off.
And then we skip from that to Captain America, Brave New World. We have the Fantastic Four, which has been brought out about 10 times, so good luck to them for the 11th. Avatar 3, again, I'm not an Avatar fan, so I'm not that excited about that. I've got to say that I find Disney's niche content far more exciting and more exhilarating than... like Avatar 2 was an alright story. It was about 3 hours too long. could have been a lot shorter. But on that, for the people like me who have absolutely dreadful attention spans, they have well, it's true, I do. They have decided to go in on a partnership with Epic Games, and that is a twofold sort of deal. Number one is they are cashing in on Fortnite and throwing themselves into that whole game platform, which has been quite popular for many different brands. It never seems to work perfectly for the brands that do jump in and do it, but you know, Fortnite is still considered one of the largest properties for a game, and it, I think it's still free to pick up. So it's a really easy way, and it catches an awful lot. It's actually quite a good game for, as I understand it, I've not played Fortnite, but it's quite a good game for free. Like, you're not required to spend money, and you can still have a very good time.
Exactly. So the deal with Fortnite and Epic Games, I think, has two sides to it. In one side, you have the game itself they're going to develop, because since a few months ago, the Fortnite game became a different sort of thing, because now there's a lot of different games inside that platform, I guess. So you can go with your buddies and play a Battle Royale game, which is the normal Fortnite game, or you can go and play Rocket League, which is a game where you play with cars. So there's the Lego Fortnite, which was a huge success for the first months, and a lot of people play that game. So I think it will be very interesting to see how Disney does this. I don't think it's going to be just a Disney-themed game, but something like a world where you can do all sorts of things, from playing games to watch Disney Plus right there, to go to Shop Disney and buy products. I think there's a lot of stuff that could be done in there. And then there's the second part, because Disney also acquired $1.5 billion worth of Epic Games. And Epic Games produces the Unreal Engine, which is what movie productions use for the volume used in The Mandalorian, in all the different Disney Plus shows. So they definitely want to have some sort of control over that. Because they're using it more and more for content creation, and I think that's also a very interesting point in the whole Epic Games Disney deal.
Yeah, definitely. The other thing is Disney's never. I mean, they've had some good games. I mean, Epic Mickey was always quite fun, but Disney have struggled a lot to be in the gaming market, and it's kind of interesting as a content house that they don't have an in-house. And I think that we're going to see that, you know, like a partnership with Epic is the best way to do that. While we're talking about Epic things, tell us what's been happening there.
Epic Universe.
Yes.
So, they kicked off their marketing campaign, I guess that's what you can call it. It was a very well-produced video with Mark Woodbury, which is the head of Universal Creative. And it was a super well-made video where he explains the concept of Epic Universe and how they're going to play out with the different lands and how it's going to, you know, work out. And I think it got a lot of people really excited for 2025. And for that brand new Orlando theme park that's going to be huge and spectacular in a lot of reasons.
Yeah, so to recap, we had the entrance to Epic Universe. It is a very different designed park than we've come to see. It's definitely not a hub-and-spoke park. It's more a blend of sort of portals to new lands. Certainly, you know, if you think that Island's Adventure was definitely walk, you know, you'd go one way around the lake. And if you think the Magic Kingdom is certainly like, oh, we've got Adventureland here, Frontierland there. This is much better than this in some ways. This is, you know, you go through the little portals, which they're making quite a big deal of, and you can enter from two sides. You can enter from Celestial Park, or you can enter effectively from the Grand Hotel Helios at the other side. And then you've got two ends to sort of central, almost what were they called? It was like a national park sort of thing. Like the Celestial Park was going to be effectively a nice district you could be in at any time, and it's got a lot of water elements, it's got a lot of trees, it's got an awful lot of kinetic elements that are just fantastic. And then built off that, you've got Super Nintendo World, the Dark Universe, the Wizarding World of Harry Potter, Ministry of Magic, and then you've got How to Train Your Dragon, which is the Isle of Berk. So,
Exactly.
I mean, the imagery is fantastic. Like, the whole damn thing is fantastic, to be honest.
It's a different concept, a different way to design the theme park, which is something that Universal has been gaining a lot of terrain on Disney. I mean, Islands of Adventure opened as one of the best designed theme parks ever created, and to this day, it is one of those. You have all the different islands that connect as, you know, their own world, and now they brought this to the next level where you're completely immersed in that land. You don't see anything, you know, than what they want you to see in that land, and that's, I mean, that's gonna be amazing to be in the streets of Paris, with, you know, Wizarding World characters, or in Isle of Berk flying with dragons. I mean, that's really going to be very exciting.
It's definitely going to be one of the more interesting theme parks ever to open. I was reading, I think today, maybe yesterday, that there's also hidden elements in Celestial Park from Back to the Future.
Oh
So
yeah. I
there's going
think
to
it's
be a
in
bit.
the is it in the roller coaster, right? The Starfall Racers, I believe that's the name. I think they call it the flux capacitor in those I think, I'm not sure, in the ride vehicles. In the cars. So yeah, that's very interesting. A nice callback to a franchise they should definitely use in their theme parks more, and unfortunately don't.
So
So that's cool.
that was quite good news. The other thing we got is, I'm guessing because they released it, they're now somewhat confident of the opening date, or they're somewhat confident of the opening timeline, because they've started to say this is now locked in. We've started to move on. We've started to get ready for opening. The hotels are coming together. I believe that you can now start to book into some of the. You start now to check, not check in, book
You
the hotels.
can book the two of the new three hotels, which is the, what are the names? It's like Stella
Stella
Luna,
Nova and Terra
or
Luna or something.
exactly, that's it. I think that's it. So you can book those two, not the Helios Grand Hotel, but those two I think you can from January 2025. So that's very exciting. I do think the original, you know, sort of rumored opening was going to be summer 2025, but now a lot of people are convinced it's going to open sooner than that, which would be pretty amazing, you know, like a spring opening. I think that could be done. I mean, the park is looking very complete. You know, you don't have the pavements yet, but that's, you know, kind of
I think, did they not say
past.
on an investor call if they could have effectively they're moving full tilt, and if they should never have downed tools over COVID sort of thing. They definitely wish they could have gone faster. So I'd imagine they're throwing everything they can at it. It is a huge park. I mean, it just huge.
It's very big.
It's very big, and they haven't just stopped there. They're still doing an awful lot of work at Universal Studios. There's still things happening. There's, you know, we've got Shrek's
Yeah,
house. We've got.
the kiddie zone, or I don't know what it was called, but that's completely demolished, and they're building a brand new little kiddie area in the back, so over at ET Adventure. So that's cool, I guess. And then, you know, there's a lot of rumors about what's going to happen after Epic opens. Most of these come from Alicia Stella in Theme Parks Top. And she says that, I'll try to remember, the Simpsons area is going. Simpsons will stop existing in Orlando.
That makes sense. It's a Disney property now.
Exactly. They're paying Disney. But they're also paying Disney through Marvel, so... For now, they're paying a lot of money to Disney to use those characters. But so Simpsons is going. I'm not sure what was going to replace it. But over at Islands of Adventure, the whole... what was it called? That show they had with Poseidon.
The Journey in Atlantis or something.
Yeah, something like that. Whole area is also going. And, you know, they... are not stopping. They're gonna open this huge new theme park and then they'll start working on the next thing immediately. And that's something that really excites me and we don't see Disney doing these days.
Yeah, Disney's been caught kind of slow. We were having a chat earlier on, I don't know if you were in it, but we were having a chat about Tron. And one of my bones of contention on Tron is that there's an awful lot of people's body shape doesn't fit it in Orlando. And there's an awful lot of people who find it kind of boring. Like, Tron is visually quite appealing, and it has not a bad story to it, but the actual ride is very short and is very boring. It's bereft of any sort of interesting features. It's effectively an uncomfortable ride that you get saddled into and then get fired out. And it kind of, you know, it's quite a smooth roller coaster, but it's not a fun roller coaster in the sense of the word. And I think one of the big things that Universal have done in the same sort of time frame is they opened Hagrid's bike ride thing through.
It's a big name.
I can't remember what the name is, but
Hagrid's Magical Creatures Motorbike Adventure. I think that's it.
Yeah, something like that. But anyway, Hagrid's motorbike. Now, they use a completely different bike, which actually feels faster, although I've checked. It's actually slower, so it's 44 miles an hour. And the Tron goes up to 60 miles an hour. So Tron is faster, but it doesn't feel faster, I must say, when you're on it. Probably because you're in a sort of, you're leaning forward and you're pressed down into the seat, so it doesn't feel that fast. It just feels uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and I think one of the interesting things is here's two companies who've developed bike coasters. Disney oddly managed to spend more on their bike coaster despite having a lot less theming and a lot less elements, as they commonly do manage. Yeah. And you have an awful lot of people who will say that Hagrid's is just the better ride. It is a far more interesting ride. It has, I hope I'm not spoiling it for anyone, but it's a wee bit old now. It has drops, it has turns, it has sudden stops, it has reversing portions, it has parts where there's things jump out at you, it has heat, it has cold, it has lots.
It has a lot and of then, things, yeah.
And then you've got Tron, which kind of goes really quickly and puts you in a really uncomfortable position.
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things we're seeing is Universal have learned a little bit more magic on, especially the thrill rides, on how to make them really, really cool. And I think you're right. With the opening at Epic Universe, I'm really excited to see what they've come up with, because I think that when they're really uncapped and they're not thinking project by project, but thinking on a grand, you know, how do we make all this work together? This is going to be a special resort. This park, people are like, nobody will ever take on Disney, but everybody says that before it actually happens, you know, before HP and Apple and things took over, nobody thought you could ever beat IBM, but, you know, IBM was kicked out of the home computer market quite quickly. 20 years ago, people said Nokia and BlackBerry were dethroned, and I think the iPhone here. Yeah. So, you know, if Disney don't wake up to it and Disney don't stop putting absolute trash in the rides, I think they're in some danger. Now, there's a lot of evidence to suggest, you know, with the DLP expansion with Lion King and Frozen and Rise of the Resistance, Disney can compete when they try. But it's, you know, are they trying?
Exactly. So I haven't been able to ride Tron. It was still under construction the last time I went to Disney World. But I did ride Hagrid's, and I gotta say that is one of my favorite attractions anywhere. It's not only a brilliant roller coaster, family roller coaster. It's not, you know, it's not a velocicoaster in terms of thrill, but it still has a lot of elements that give you that thrilling feeling, and it's really cool. You have a lot of stuff happening, music, and as you said, a lot of elements, and I really enjoyed that. And again, as you said, it just proves how far Universal has come in terms of making an attraction stand out and not just be a roller coaster, because Universal also has, you know, just roller coasters. You have Hulk, which has barely any theming, and then you have this story coaster, which has a story, and you're put in the middle of an abandoned part of Hogwarts, and you know, it's just spectacular.
Well, Disney are really hoping you've not been on that before you ride Tron. hoping you don't know about that roller coaster.
Building Tron. Yeah,
exactly. It took them like 7 years to build Tron, which was just ridiculous.
Yeah.
However, moving on, because we'll get stuck here all day. Universal Great Britain, they seem to have now come out of hiding and have kind of admitted, yes, okay, we're going to move forward with this. It's now moved from we're scoping this as a land to actually we now intend to build this. Very subtle change. It's not, there's nothing being submitted or anything, but it's definitely now they've moved on to we're consulting with the local community and we're now meeting the MP on a monthly basis. And I think they said that, I think in a rare show of unity, the UK Parliament was kind of like, yeah, this is a good idea, we should do this. I guess
a theme park fan, so
well
always good to know.
it's an election year, so the UK's gearing up for an election, which for anybody who doesn't live in the UK, you should know, has absolutely no timetable. It's all about when the current party of government decides they've got a leg up on the other party. It's a very unfair system, but that is just how it works in the UK. They can either lose a conference, run it, but we've not got that. Oh, I've just noticed a saying Simpsons may be replaced by Pokemon in Orlando.
Oh yeah, JoJo.
That seems kind of likely as well. I would say that's a nice big property. Nintendo. Uh-huh. Nintendo and Universal are very in cahoots just now. They're very keen to work together.
Yeah.
I think one of the interesting things about when people choose to partner with Universal give you creative control, and they just, they're like, here's, you know, here's the five ride systems. You can have a look at them, and we will build your theming in. You tell us
theming. Yeah, exactly. That's what got J.K. Rowling on their side, because she came to Disney first. Disney was originally going to build a Harry Potter land, but it was very small and lackluster, and she just said, yeah, no. And so that's how we got, how many? Five Wizarding Worlds, four Wizarding Worlds around the world, which are very good.
Yeah.
So,
I've also heard they're possibly adapting the Cursed Child stage show to a short show for Universal. So
for a Universal theme park?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
I think they really want a Harry Potter show. I don't know. This might be some magic sort of land. Okay. The main news there being that Universal seem to have upgraded. This might happen to this is happening, and we're glad government agree with us. Now that can still break down. I'm a firm believer that it probably will, but let's take this small victory and run with it. The next thing we've got on the agenda is the Disneyland Hotel.
Yes, reopening of the Big flagship Pink hotel in Disneyland Paris. So it reopened in January, in late January. The first days were kind of rough, actually. A lot of photos. I saw some photos with some construction equipment still in, you know, outside, and carpets rolled up in inside. So it was a bit of a rough reopening. But then a couple of days later, they had the media opening, the official reopening, with the show on the hotel itself, the hotel facade. And I gotta say, that was amazing. It was a small show, but they had projection mapping, they had live actors, they had fireworks. It was very nice. I really enjoyed that.
I'm personally lost at this, so let me go through it. About a month and a half prior to opening, they decided they were going to have a large-scale production in front of it that apparently lasted 7 minutes. Now, had they, you know, cut a ribbon in front of it, or had they set up a bunch of fireworks in celebration of it in the park, I don't know. Yeah. It would have been enough, but instead they created this great big show, and we had podiums, and we had projections, and we projection mapped the whole thing, and then they've taken it away now. Like, it was for one. Projection map it from the other side and leave the projectors so that you can, you know, integrate it into your nighttime show or something. Yeah, it doesn't land.
I also thought about that. But I mean, well, the media gets what the media gets. They wanted to make sure it opened with a bang, and all the way to Dubai, and the rich people could see the reopening, so they could afford it.
The one thing I do wonder is perhaps they knew the hotel is not finished. So let's distract them with some fireworks and a show. Let's have them talk about. We could talk about this endlessly. They wanted to show it off while it was brand new. Like, you know, we've heard, and I think some in our own community have even reported that the rooms weren't correct, and they had to move between rooms. And you know, Disneyland Paris could have. You need to put an opening date on it, because otherwise forever, and you'll never finish your project. I completely understand why they need to put an opening date on it. However, those are the nights you sell to us, bloggers and cheap travel media and stuff, and you say, look, there are going to be problems, but this is why you're paying, you know, only £100 a night or something, 100 euros a night. You know, we want you to comment on the food or the decor, or, you know, ignore the fact there's a big rug in the middle of the expansion wing. You know, that's why you do previews and why you don't real paying guests. But some people were paying about 750 euros a night to stay in a hotel that was still a construction site, where the electricity in the room you couldn't charge your phone.
That's very bad.
And I think, you know, Disneyland Paris again, just that last 10 minutes of effort. However, everybody has been very complimentary. The shops, the rooms in general are getting very good reviews, and I think it does feel quite luxurious. And certainly there's been no shortage of people trying to get in to go and view the hotel.
That's a big part of it, which is actually funny. Did you see the little cards they're giving people to to enter the hotel?
It's worth noting, this is just so you can get in the hotel, possibly eat in the restaurant, possibly sit in the cafe, and possibly visit the shop. That's all it entitles you to. These are all paid activities.
I saw someone on Twitter, I'm not sure if it's true or not, but he said, they said they've been waiting for an hour to enter the Disneyland Hotel. So that makes it the longest queue in the park at that moment, which is so funny to me.
It's ridiculous as well, though.
My God.
This is one of those interesting things. See if you just let people in from day, say, oh, you can all come in from day 10 or something. They wouldn't turn up. People would not be that interested. But the minute you make it exclusive, people need to be there.
Exactly.
We've got a question there from, I'm assuming, I mean, when people take, but anyway, Bastion 446. What does Disney have to do to come with epic universe in art, in my opinion? I think me and Bernardo would have different opinions, but I'll let Bernardo. What do you think Disney has to do to compete with an epic universe?
Actually, that's a very good question. And secondly, DSNU Newscast just made a video yesterday trying to answer this very question, so I'm going to try to quote him on some things because I really agreed with what he said. So, first of all, I think Disney should bring back perks that they lost during the COVID-19 pandemic, or people that buy into the hotels lost. Some perks that should have returned after, but are still to return to this day. Then discounts. They need to make some new discounts and try to ride the Epic Universe wave, because a lot of people are coming to Orlando, and a lot of people are, if you make a big vacation to Orlando, you're definitely going to stay in Disney. So with Epic Universe, in my opinion, actually gain a lot of people that are coming to Orlando, to experience a new theme park, but they might lose some market share in the time that the people are going to stay there. So let's say if you have a week to experience the most you can in Orlando, you have Disney World, you have Universal, and a lot of people are going to choose Epic Universe over Animal Kingdom, over Epcot, over all the Disney parks, because they don't offer anything new. So in that sense, they're going to lose market share, but they will bring new people into the resort from Epic. So in a way, short term, I don't think Disney really has to build, I mean, they don't have the time to build anything new, but they don't short term have to build something new to attract people, because people are just going to come anyway. But long term, they definitely need to build new and exciting attractions, and not only create some sort of capacity in their theme parks, but also something that will attract new guests and more guests to their theme parks. So yeah, that's it for me.
Here's what I would do. There's three options as I see it. Number one, you can build your fifth gate, and I believe this is what Disney will actually do. And everybody disagrees with me on this. I completely understand that everybody thinks it's way off in the future, but in marketing terms, saying you have a whole new big bad park works a lot better than saying I've added one ride. People, they plan whole new trips to see new parks and stuff. Universal absolutely know this.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you could fix the situation that's been created at Walt Disney World. Walt Disney World was created on the promise of Walt Disney, which was that fathers should have somewhere to take their daughters at weekends. That was how they created Disneyland, and then he created Walt Disney World as a father's, and I presume he means mothers as well, would have somewhere to take their kids for a vacation. Yep. Disney World no longer fulfills that promise. Disney World is now not a vacation, it is a planning conference for you and your entire family. You need to plan in advance when you're going to eat, what you're going to eat, what park you're going to be in, what Lightning Lane.
Yeah.
You now have to pay an absolute fortune. You have to work out your... There is absolutely zero... And there's zero in that is a random weekend. And that's because the Walt Disney Company, after Michael Eisner was no longer in charge, decided to stop building. Michael Eisner was probably the last time that there was more park capacity than guests.
Yeah.
And Michael Eisner was a great fan of when there wasn't enough capacity, he was a great open earlier and stay open late. I mean, some of my first memories of Disney were being there till 2 and 3 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
Now, they done that by doing, and this is kind of part three, you can't just go back now. Now that you've created, now that you're planning everything, you can't just, because you're now so far beyond capacity that you need to reinvent what you're offering. And I think that is going to be uncomfortable for me, but that's going to be things like a drone show. It's going to be a night parade in Animal Kingdom or Epcot. A night parade like the Main Street Electrical studios. It's going to be creating new entertainment. It's going to be creating a lot of new rides and filling in a lot of problems you have. It's going to be... The Magic Kingdom is as busy as it needs to be now, so you need to create some really cool activities in other parts, like they've done in Hollywood Studios, to drag people to them. And then finally, you need to create... And when I say create, I mean you need to double the number of restaurants on the site. This idea that you have to be booking your restaurant van needs to go and die in a ditch somewhere. People should be able to... I mean, Disney literally are turning away people willing to spend several hundred dollars on dinner and saying, yeah, I'm sorry, you didn't book. So they're left with only spending $50 in a quick service or $25 on a food cart. And exactly, that's for a whole family. Like, it's ludicrous when you could get $250, except that you might only get a couple of... Like, I don't know. I don't know who does the business sense at Disney, but you need more restaurant capacity. It's crying out for restaurant capacity across the whole resort. And of course, the minute you add those restaurants, sit down for an hour or two and one, they're not in your queue.
Exactly.
And I don't understand how this money just sits on the table continuously. And Disney are like, oh, well, you haven't booked, so that's that. People should be able to book. People should be able to, you know, if you're at the Magic Kingdom, you think, oh, my legs are really tired. I'd really like down for marshmallows dipped in chocolate while drinking wine and watching the fireworks. Why can you not buy that on the night? How have you not come up with a way that you can spend more money?
Yeah.
I get that it's sold out in advance, so they maybe don't feel the need for it. But there's, how many times have you been to Disney Park and if they said to you, by the way, we'll reserve you a fireworks and if you'll give us €100, you can go and, you know, eat more desserts than you can imagine and have a couple of glasses of wine. You would do it, no?
Yeah. I guess so.
So, I mean, in some ways, it's not even about Disney being cheaper. It's about you could actually sell more by me. And just silly things like the Magic Kingdom, 50,000, 65,000 people in it at the end of the night. And then they're like, oh, the monorail, which, by the way, is broken on days. And that daft boat, you know, back to the car park. Just, I don't know what they need to put in. I don't know. Put in another monorail. Like, put in put the Skyliner in. Put whatever it takes. But you need to deal with the fact that people at 11 o'clock at night, who, by the way, you wouldn't let them sit down and eat desserts and pay you for the privilege, are now waiting an hour to leave. Like, I think that if they'd done that, you would just have, by default, a bigger choice in Epic Universe.
Mm-hmm.
And you would be able to fight back on some things that Disney was founded on, which is, you know, really simple vacations.
Yeah, exactly.
For families. Mm-hmm. But, and it doesn't even need to be, you don't need to lose money, you could make more money. But they don't want to do that. I don't get it. It's like reservations. I am still convinced that reservations are there's no way. Disney have just done an investor's. We're losing people, and we're going to build this big expansion now. Disney will not build an expansion if they do not have to build an expansion. That's just, you know, if they can get more money for doing nothing, they will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Reservations completely undermine that whole business model by saying that actually, you know, if we can get more and more money out of small people, that's better for us. If that's their business model, that's what doing. The 60 billion expansion does not compute with them. We're not going to let people in.
Yeah,
like they're stuck because they sell these annual passes, and the annual passes, people spend a lot on annual pass, but they don't spend a lot in the park, is what Disney are effectively saying. The problem for Disney is that they've hit a problem where the regular price of tickets should be a lot lower than they already are, and the annual pass price should be significantly higher. Mm-hmm. And that may, that I know I'm going to be unpopular, but you have an annual pass pricing problem. That's all it is. Or don't sell an annual pass that has access in the four busiest weeks of the year. Because, I mean, when we get down to the sort of brass tacks of it, the annual pass is only a problem for about 4 weeks, maybe 5 weeks a year. Don't sell an annual pass that had... Block those dates out and say there is no 3 weeks pass, sorry.
Mm-hmm.
If you really, really, really... On the five busiest weeks of the year, you're going to have to either book a Disney hotel because that's just how we roll.
Yeah.
And people will moan, but the truth is nobody is spending 52 weeks in Disney. So
mm-hmm.
that would be my great plan for the savior of the parks.
yeah. Okay, so hopefully that answers your question on our opinions.
And then finally, we've got a new season at Disneyland Paris.
Yes.
The Symphony of Color.
So, Main Street is completely decorated for the season, actually, with some strange decorations, I guess. Yep. They look very cool during the night, so that's a plus. But they're, honestly, it's kind of a difficult situation to explain because the rest of the season doesn't really connect with those decorations. Do you know what I mean? In one side, you have the parade, which is all cartoons and drawings and paint and colors, and then you have those pixie fairy houses and stuff, I guess. So it's very odd why they connected these two very different things together.
It's not grown on me whatsoever. I seen the start, and I think the Disney's Electrical Sky Parade, fantastic. The new parade floats have a unique look to them. They're certainly better than, I always forget the actual name of it, but Ready for the Ride.
Yeah.
What was that called? It had a name. It wasn't Ready for the Ride. Nobody does, because it was the Ready for the Ride parade, but that was the song, not the parade. Somebody will put it in the chat shortly. And I don't think the floats... I mean, the floats are obviously custom done. I don't think they look great. The outfits on the characters, again, fairly forgettable. The song... The song I'm stuck with, because I've not heard... I mean, it sounds as though it's got potential, but again, it's not stuck in my mind. And from the videos that I've seen on TikTok and I've seen on YouTube, it's not... I don't know, it doesn't seem as good as Ready for the Ride or the Halloween Harvest song or... Dream and Shine Brighter was the name of the parade. You are correct, Bastion. You are correct. It was called Dream and Shine Brighter, but Ready for the Ride was the name of the song. And it really stuck with everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It was and I'm a bit song. Worried that this season looks like, let's try and recreate it, but just...
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like the season, unlike Pirates and Princesses, which was completely different, unlike the Jungle Book Jive, which was completely different, unlike, I'm trying to think what other favourable seasons, Halloween, Christmas, what was Pirates? Oh, Spring into Summer. Unlike those, this feels like they've looked at Ready for the Ride or Dream and Shine Brighter and went, just copy the 30th anniversary but give it a different song.
Yeah. It's, you know, I also get that feeling when watching the videos and the photos and the song. The song is clearly just a new Ready for the Ride song. It's basically that.
Yeah.
But strangely, it also, just like the 30th song, which was Mon qui s'illumine, this one also says a lot about the future and how the future is brighter and the future is amazing. And, you know, it's... As someone that knows what's kind of coming for Disneyland Paris with all the expansions and stuff, I just feel like it's, you know, kind of foreshadowing those things, which I find, you know, somewhat funny. But again, the song itself is just a remashed Ready for the Ride, in my opinion, of course.
Yeah, I get the exact same vibe off it, that this is let's copy what we done for the 30th and let's make it happen, you know. And when you think of some of the ones we've had before, you know, the Jungle Book Jive had Goofy bursting out the castle, playing drums, and that was the first time we got the sort of paint fireworks or the powder fireworks that we've seen. Halloween has its own sort of feel to it. Christmas certainly has the bubble snow or whatever you call it, the fake snow. And then you've got Dream and Shine Brighter was just a fantastic parade that captured so many people. And then this one felt a bit like, okay, that's kind of cool.
Yeah, funny enough,
it's on pre-launch.
These floats actually look a lot better than the ones from, what was the name? Dream and Shine Brighter.
Yeah, they do.
Those were absolutely awful looking floats. These ones actually look good and.
Well, remember, Dream and Shine Brighter was designed to last 30 days.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was a 30-day show that ended up going on for about 2 years.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So, I mean, the odd thing is people loved that show. I think this will be the opposite. I think this will probably get its initial sort of couple of months run and then it'll be quietly put in the bin. They'll call it a success, but... I would think probably not. It'll probably get reformulated into a slightly better show.
Interesting enough, the Symphony of Colors season only ends in September 30th, I think. But the Main Street decorations, that whole pixie stuff, it's ending in March or April, I think. So why? Why build these very intricate...
It goes over Christmas.
What?
Is it going over Christmas?
No. No, you mean
April this year?
Yes!
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's so strange.
Maybe they already know. Maybe they already know they're going to have to pull it. Like, the preview's been that bad. So the other thing is, the dancers for Dream and Shine Brighter aren't the dancers for Parade de Color or whatever it is. It's not the same dancers. Like, I was like, why have you just replaced people's favourite cast that have been there ever? And you've tossed them out for what might be
there.
But I did find that. But then they did have that ridiculous... Do you remember there was a ton of strikes and there was a ton of negotiations and there was... I don't know, perhaps, like... I don't know, but it could be they're looking for an agency to take over that relationship so they're not having to deal with that sort of drama anymore. I don't know. I really don't know what...
I mean, it could be,
That, I mean, in the chat, Kidology, of something here we're not seeing because the best set of dancers and the best show we've had, and you know, had the worst floats. The show was nothing to do with the floats. Let's be clear, those floats were, you know, one of them especially, I always thought it looked like, you know, the little staircases you get at the airport. That are built onto trucks. I always thought the airport stairs were one of the floats. And I just think you've got rid of people who were really good and were really, really liked. So I don't know. There's obviously something we're missing in that little story there. And someone, Bastion's put here, he thinks the problem with the show is that they're trying to make another Dream and Shine Brighter. It's hard to make something just as great. The song is worse. The medley is also not as good as the 30th, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I think that's... I think nobody says it's a bad show, but everybody's kind of like, oh, can we have Dreamin'? You know, I mean, Dreamin' Shine Brighter at one point, Ready for the Ride, was it not woven into the villains corrupting and things, and they had it,
I guess.
There was a corruption. I'm sure there was a corruption. I remember watching it, and I thought, oh, that's just so fantastic.
Yeah, it was for the Halloween party, for the Halloween soiree.
They corrupted the song. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was so good.
It was really fun.
I get things can't be here forever. I do totally get they can't be here forever. The other big problem I've got, and I'll air this endlessly. Why do the studios just, other than Mickey's 90th or 100th or whatever we celebrated, why do the studios just ignore the whole theme of the resort? Like, it's in the village, yeah. It's in the hotels, it's, you know, it's on all the literature, it's on all the adverts, and then you get to the studios and it's like, oh, we've got some walls.
There's nothing there.
Yeah, come and look at our walls that we've built in the studios. That always seems to me really like, you know, people complain the studios feels like a second, you know, like a park that's been forgotten. And, you know, we know it's not been. You're a new guest. Unique theme going on in this big Disneyland park. And then you go to the door and they're like, yeah, no.
The construction. Here's construction. So
I mean, I can't. Yeah. Other than Mickey's birthday, can you remember a season spilling over? And that didn't really backspill into the main park, but can you remember a season leaking over?
Not really. I guess just the celebrations. The celebrations. The 30th. Just that, I guess.
They were going to do Jungle Book Jive, but then it got cancelled after they had painted everything green.
Oh, yeah, in the Motors Action Stunt Show. It was completely painted over green, and they just left it there for years.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they've taken it all off now, so somehow, I don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, Disneyland Paris, you do challenge us. I guess the last thing we need to cover before we sign off this, as we're at the hour mark now, is the $60 billion we're spending on expansion. They've now confirmed that they're accelerating that, and $42 billion being spent in the next decade, certainly not in the next year or two. It is worth caveating that doesn't include anything that's already been spent, but does include spend from that earnings call forward. So it will include payments for things that are already in flow. So there was a great debate about this online, but they kind of identified that, you know, anything they're currently building, so Walt Disney Studios still has some cost to drop out that 42. So it's you know, that's not roped off already. So, what do you think? We've not really got any new information on this, though, have we?
Not really. No. So the $42 billion are just for, I think Bob said, creating new capacity, so expansions. It's also worth noting that the $60 billion are also going to be spent on the cruise line, so not just parks and experiences, but also the cruise line. But
and they're about $2 billion a piece.
Yeah, exactly.
And we know there's three of them.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I mean, we can sort of minus off the cruise line already, because we know that they're going to spend, you know, the required one for 1.5. They're building three in total, $2 billion a piece. So that accounts for, you know, $6 to $7.5 billion already. So let's say 10. Let's round it up.
Okay. But the 30% that got chopped off from those $60 billion, they're gonna use that for stuff like renovations, refurbishment, and, you know, rehabilitating rides into new ones, perhaps. So there's a lot of stuff that isn't creating new capacity, but a lot of stuff that still can change and evolve. So now, you know, as you said, they didn't really release new info regarding where or how they're going to spend any of this money, but just reassure everyone that the money is going to be spent somewhere and somehow. I don't really have a lot to say about it.
And that is definitely a response to Universal and Epic Universe. This is, by the way, we're doing something. We're not ready to tell you what, but things are happening. So,
it's also important, just one small thing. They did say that they were planning on investing $17 billion in Orlando, so in Walt Disney World.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money. Not just for expansions, but for rehabilitations, new hotels, and who knows, Fifth Gate maybe in the future?
Probably.
You think so? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that is the end.
Yeah, so, I guess so.
Thank you very much, and I hope you, everybody listening along, has enjoyed the podcast. If you have, please suggest it to your friends or review us on iTunes or podcast app or wherever you consume your podcast. And if not, come and join us live next time. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.